So good morning and afternoon, everyone. My name is Chris Bernard, and I'm the Chief Experience Evangelist at Microsoft for the U.S. Developer and Platform Evangelism team. Today, we're going to talk about Metro-style design, specifically for Windows 8. And I'm really excited to talk about this topic because I'm trained as a designer, and one of the reasons I came to Microsoft was to help people make better experiences with software. And Metro-style design for Windows 8 represents the most sophisticated of Metro-style design language. And today, we're going to talk about some of the principles of that language. So I'm looking forward to a great session, and if you have questions, just you can use the tool to provide them through the call, and we'll do our best to answer. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get started. So Metro-style design, if you've looked at it, and I'm actually curious here a little bit too, are most folks on this call developers? And if you are, go ahead and just give a shout out saying, I'm a developer, I'm a designer. And I'm also curious how many folks have actually played with Windows 8 and actually looked at it. So if you can kind of let me know that as we go through this presentation, that would be really helpful. But the Metro-style design language fundamentally is based on looking at how we use software and how that's changed from when you look back at Windows and Windows 95 and Windows XP and even Windows 7. It's got its roots kind of in wayfinding. And so if you've ever been to an airport, right, or the London Underground, and you got to know where to go, we've really thought a lot about how we can make a design language and make a software interface that makes it really easy for everybody to figure out what to do in software. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of cover some of the traits of what a Metro-style app has. And what I'm going to do is really focus on Metro-style design, but I think it's helpful to kind of cover what all of these are first. So the first principle of a Metro-style app is there is Metro-style design. And Metro-style design is really focused on the layout of applications, how we command the interface, so the commanding interface, and then also how we use touch. It's also based on the fact that we have a type ramp, and that we have a grid that we use for Metro-style applications. And I'm going to pop out here and see if we can show you some of that really quickly. So this is actually a start screen for Windows 8. And what you'll see here is I've got all of my applications and icons that you can look at. And it's very easy for me to move around. Now, this is a touch-first interface. So what I can actually do is take my finger and drag it on the screen, and I can actually drag through all of my different icons and lists. So touch is a really important part of Windows 8. The other thing we do is we have some features in touch that we can do, a gesture like a pinch gesture. And I'm going to pinch right now. And when I do that, what you see is I kind of have a zoomed out view, and I can kind of see all the icons and tools that I actually have in my copy of Windows 8 that are here. And that actual feature is called semantic zoom. And that's kind of how we make a touch-first interface with Windows. The other thing that we do is we think pretty carefully about the commanding interface and how that works with touch. And there's two things to think about. First and foremost, I really want you to be on the screen in terms of what you can do so I can touch and manipulate everything directly. So if I want to open up Internet Explorer, I touch that icon and I open it up. And you know, you'll have to pardon me, even sometimes I make mistakes. It's actually not an icon, it's a tile that I'm touching that I want to upgrade in real time. The other thing I can do is I have certain gestures that I use to select things. So one of the great things about your finger, and if you can see my finger on the screen here, that little circle, is fingers are lousy pointing devices. And sometimes an easier way to select things is to swipe. So one of the things that I can actually do is swipe little icons here to select multiple items. And you can probably see as I swipe, I get my little check marks up here and I can select things. And the other thing that happens is we see a little bar pop up at the top of the screen, or at the bottom of the screen. This bar is called my app bar. This is how we do commanding functions in Windows 8. So I'm going to clear that selection. But one of the other things I do is, so I can get Chrome off the screen, is I make sure that things only appear when I need it to. So that bar goes away when I don't actually need it there. So there we see I made a change to that icon. The other thing that I do from a commanding perspective, when I think of, you know, how do I get Chrome off my screen, is I swipe out and we see that I have a set of charms that run down the side of my screen. Now, in a perfect world, we would have called these lucky charms. We couldn't get the licensing agreement for that. But what these do is provide a universal set of attributes for how you can actually do things in Windows. So we have the same way to search, the same way to share, the same way to play to devices, and the same way to look at settings for every Metro app. Now, as a developer, you might say, I'm used to building that myself. And what we want to do is make all those mundane things that are never primary to software a first-class experience for all Windows applications. So we provide a great opportunity for you with the Windows Run RT to actually get out of the business of having to do that and build great functionality in your apps. And we'll talk about that a little bit in this presentation and what it means. And then finally, if we go in and look at some of these apps here, is I'm going to scroll through and I'll try to show you, we'll show you the USA Today app here. This is a newspaper application. You'll see that, the other thing that defines a Metro app, aside from how we use those app bars and how we use charms and how we use touch on the page, is what the interface looks like. So here you actually see a grid, right? This is a grid, and we flatten out all of our content in a specific structure. So I don't just have a website with a feature story and then a list of all my different categories. What I actually have is all of those categories flattened out. And this almost makes your application like the cover of a magazine where I can surface content. So for example, if I click on this story in life here, we'll see that I go into my story view. I've got this beautiful picture. I've got my beautiful content that I can look at. But it's actually has a hierarchy of information in what I do. So if I actually go back here and I'm going to flip up my app bar just by swiping from the bottom, I can go back to that home page and see these things. And there's a hierarchy of information, right? There's headers and the way that the listings are in articles versus the actual sections that I look at are actually very different. So it gives me a lot of opportunity to tell a user what's going to be important on the page. And all those things are what actually make up what we call Metro-style design. But there's more that we can talk about as well. And that is understanding, how applications in Metro are fast and fluid. Well, what do we mean by fast and fluid? Well, I know it's hard to tell on the meeting and the presentation mechanism we're using right now, but everything in Windows 8 is fast. The animations and the transitions that we use, much like Windows Phone, are very purposeful. They're not full of artifice. They're to convey the speed, and they're to convey what you're trying to do in the application. This is extended to how we use touch. Touch allows for affordances in things that our fingers aren't good at, right? So if I'm a little inaccurate, my touch targets account for that. If I want to drag with two fingers or three fingers, the interface will account for that. And it means that when you have a Windows 8 device in hand and you're using it as in a touch-first mode, that touch works really, really well and is really, really responsive. The other thing that we think about what makes a great application, what makes a great Metro experience, is how applications will snap and scale beautifully. Now, this is really important because Windows isn't a device that runs on one form factor. It'll run on many form factors, and it will even run on devices with different processor architectures, too. So there'll be a version of Windows that will actually run on ARM devices, and all the Metro applications that you create and build will run on any type of Windows 8 device. But it might be in different form factors. It might be in a kiosk mode. It might be on a 7-inch screen, a 10-inch screen, an 11-inch screen, all the way up to a 60-inch screen. So we need to think about how do those applications look beautiful and work great across all those different resolutions, and also how can we make those applications work well in kind of a dual-use mode. So there's some special mode and a new feature in Windows that we have that's called Snap Mode. And what Snap Mode actually lets me do is actually open up an application, and then if I have another application open, I can actually keep that application open side by side. So one of the things I can do here is I'm going to flick back to one of my other applications, my USA Today, and I'm going to drag out my little stock application that I just had open, and I have a fully functional stock application here that is kind of on the left side of my menu that I can use at the same time that I can use my USA Today menu. And this is really important because when you design an application for Windows 8, every app that's Metro-styled can snap. And it creates a great new experience model for people in terms of how they can design and how they can experience applications for Windows. So the next thing that we care about is using the right contracts. When I flicked my thumb out here and I showed you these different charms, what makes these charms work is the contracts that you actually invoke when you develop an application. So there is a certain contract that you invoke when you want to use search. there's a certain contract you invoke when you want to use share. And using those right is a real important way to make a great app experience. And as a great example of this, there's probably not too many applications that you're going to build for Metro where you're not actually going to want to use the search contract. It's a really valuable tool that lets you not only search when you're using the application itself, but it allows you to conduct a search right from the desktop into any application and content that they might possess without even having the application open. Share contracts are another thing. We've become used to the fact that there's always little links saying share this on Twitter or share this on Facebook. And sometimes when you go do that, you on the link, then you get an iframe, you get a login to the website, and sometimes you just decide it's not worth it. We want to make sharing easy and make it something that's one click. So as an example of the share contract, I might be in IE right now. Let's go and we'll find a story here. I'll click on this Facebook story here. And I might decide that this is a great story. I'll get rid of my ad here. And when that loads up, I may decide, wow, this is a great story. I want to share it with my friends. I've got all these little share icons right here that I can push and get an iframe. But I can also just flick right out and hit my share icon, and I can pick a tool that I may have that can share to Facebook right now. So this kind of tool might actually let me post the link to this story, add a few characters or comments, and let me select, do I want to actually share it with Facebook or with Twitter? Two clicks, and I'm done. So these are great examples of where choosing the right contracts can make your app experience work really well, whether it's content that you want to share out of your app or whether you build an application that you want to enable people to share content with. So the next thing that we care about is investing in a great tile. Those of you that have done Windows 8 development might be familiar with our phone. And Windows Phone 7, specifically Windows Phone 7.5, has a real rich interface for building what we call live tiles and tiles that can update. And I have some of this stuff turned off in my interface here right now, but you know, building a dynamic tile that updates. So if it's an email application that you'll actually see emails update. And I can't show you my private information in this presentation, but actually, you know what? What the heck? Let's go turn it on here, and we'll show you what notifications look like actually. And we'll go look at my notifications here. And I'm going to move that snapped mode out of the way so we have full screen. Let's see here. Got my users. We've got my notifications. And yeah, some of these should start updating pretty soon now that I turn that on. But if we go back here, is these applications, as I interact with them, will actually update in real time. And the utilization of an app with a live tile in Windows Phone increases by about 30%. So what this enables you to do is have conversations via the tile with your user without them ever having to actually be in the application. And that's another thing that makes a great experience in Windows 8 with a Metro-style experience, where I could have my favorite book if I'm reading Game of Thrones in Kindle, and I actually want to pin that tile right to the page. Or my movie application could automatically show me movies that are close to me that are playing right now. My music application could actually show me what song is playing now or give me updates on what other friends are listening to. I mean, it's virtually unlimited what are the great experiences that you can actually create when you start thinking about how you can use tiles. And then finally, feeling connected and alive is important too, which means that the best way to make a great Windows 8 application that's Metro-styled is to make sure you are aware of what are all the other great applications out there that you can work with. So when you think of how photo apps might work great with food spotting or restaurant applications or social applications, or when you think of how music apps and what you're listening to might be really interesting to share with social applications, understanding how you can make your application more valuable by leveraging what other applications do is a great opportunity in Windows 8 with Metro-style applications. And with things like Charms, we provide tools to make it super, super easy for you to provide these differentiating features without having to build it from the ground up. And then finally, there's a whole set of things that we can do about roaming with settings and how applications work that can make applications just way more easy to set up and feel much more personal to the user. As an example, I have multiple Windows 8 devices. And what's so fantastic about them is as soon as I set up my Windows ID with a new Windows 8 device, all of my settings for all of my apps get synced across every device. It's beautiful. There's no passwords. I don't need to do anything. Once I enter that password and link that account, everything is connected for me. And we can go farther than that, where if you actually link certain applications to Windows Live ID, when you actually log in or download an application that's already affiliated with a Live ID, a user will never even need to sign into that app. It'll just happen automatically. So understanding how we can do things like that or share settings across different apps when someone may have multiple devices is another great way to make experiences that are just different than what we have right now on other platforms. And then finally, you know, embrace Metro principles. And when I talk about Metro principles, it's what we're going to spend the rest of this call going through, and that's understanding what makes a great Metro app. We've talked about a bunch of things that we do, but when you put them all together, that really creates the magic sauce. And the magic sauce for Metro 8 applications are about figuring out what you want to be best at as an application, and figuring out not what to add in an application, but what you can strip away. So you can focus on building a nice, clean, efficient, beautiful application that lets someone do something easier than just about any other way possible that they can do it. And all of the things that I just talked about are the pieces that we give you as developers and designers to actually go out and do that. So let's move ahead here right now. We covered all of these. And what I'm going to do right now for the rest of this conversation is really, really focus on Metro-style design and Metro principles. The rest of these topics, if you actually go back to some of our build sessions that we had last year, we actually have a talk called 8 Great Traits where we'll touch on all of these. I kind of gave you the short version of that, but what I want to do is really focus on Metro-style design. So if we go back to Metro-style design, it's fundamentally about doing more with less. It's about pride and craftsmanship. The details matter in a Metro application. It doesn't mean that you have to be accountable for all of them, but if you use our development tools and you follow our templates, that precision and that craftsmanship is already there. And it's about being fast and fluid. It's about being authentically digital. There's a concept that some of you may be familiar with called skeuomorphism. I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but skeuomorphism is a concept where you take digital experiences and you root them with something in reality. So if you're making a notepad or a journal application, it may look like an old battered up notebook, right? Or if you're making an airline application, you may have a fake little airline desk that people check into when they use your app. Skeuomorphism is sometimes perceived as great because it provides the familiar with something digital, but it's also incredibly inefficient. And a great example of that, there's other platforms where people have ported applications for synthesizers and keyboards. And if you've ever looked at those applications, it looks like a real keyboard, and they have all these knobs and wires and stuff like that that you can physically touch and manipulate. But it's actually a very unproductive way to actually use a music piece of software versus someone that would be authentically digital and embrace the medium for how you would embrace all of those changes. And we want to make sure that you're authentically digital when you build your applications. Don't have drop shadows for no reason. Don't have artifice and things like that that take away from the experience, but really mask it. And then finally, we want you to win as one by understanding that leveraging charms and leveraging the capabilities of other applications in the ecosystem is the best way to make your app fantastic and useful for users. So let's talk a little bit about doing more with less. Started working on Windows 8, we did a lot of focus testing. And we actually asked people to go tell us, well, what is Windows? And this is kind of a representation of what we got when we had that conversation. Now, if you look at this, what you actually see is that the people that were in that focus group actually drew the Windows, right? That's what Windows is to them. It's Chrome. And when we went back and we actually worked on Windows 8, and we showed some of these users what I'm showing you today, what we got back was a sketch that looked like this. And you could probably say, well, that looks like Windows to me too. But if you understand Windows 8, it's really not Chrome. It's the applications and the content that's in those applications itself. So that's the kind of stuff that we actually get to see. And oops, I'm going to have to log into my Kindle account again. We'll have to find a different one for you to look at here. So it actually lets you see the content versus the Chrome. If we look here, the story is the link, right? So that's different from just having a box that's an icon, right, or a button. And it gets us out of that whole world where we need to think about stuff like that. So this whole fundamental structure is rooted in some concepts in design that are commonly called Swiss design, international style, or Bauhaus. If you want to go back in time, it's really called Distill. And these design patterns may be very unfamiliar to you, but if you look at concepts in the developer world, you know, that we've used for decades, you know, agile programming, paired programming, you know, systems design or systems engineering, or, you know, companies like 37 Signals and how they build their Basecamp products, software designers have been using these design principles for decades. Now, with Metro, we're actually taking those design principles into software as well. And so this whole fundamental thing is, it's not just something that we made up. There's a big body of knowledge and research about effectiveness in software and how people use things that really informs this design process. And when we think about content before Chrome, what we really mean in Metro is that we want content to be the heart of the experience. We want to leave only the most relevant elements on the screen. And we want to solve for distractions and not discoverability. This is something that, I'll be honest with you, I'm a designer. My designer friends have a hard time accepting that. They have a hard time understanding that, because in the world of the web and software for the past 10 or 20 years, we focused almost exclusively on wayfinding, saying the most important thing is knowing always where you are and where you can go. In Metro, we really don't care about that, because we've tried to make the interface and the model so simple that it's easy to find what you want, and we want you to really be immersed and focus on your content. And that's the most important part of understanding how to design for Metro, is we want to get all the noise and the distractions out of the way, and people can explore and find what they need, because we built some great models to help them do that. So the challenge with Chrome is we need it in software and applications, right? We use Chrome to help us understand layout, to understand integration and interaction and navigation. And layout creates visual clarity, you know, with graphic elements, and sometimes we have to use a lot of artifice when we do that in traditional application development. We want to do that with graphic elements and type in Metro. We want to remove all the lines and boxes as a way to group and organize content, because quite honestly, with Metro, you don't need them. And we want to give content breathing room through an intentional use of space. What this does is it creates a visual hierarchy, and it kind of helps us understand what's important. As we go through some examples, you'll see what I'm talking about. So this is a great example now of an RSS reader, right? A typical RSS reader where, you know, we see our tree view, we see the feeds that we're looking at, and we see detailed content. There's a lot of Chrome here, and there's a lot of boxes and things that kind of define boundaries. But it's pretty easy for me to remove those, and the application still makes sense, and it still works. Fundamentally, that's what we're trying to do with Metro. But we can do things with Metro that can make that content and structure beautiful as well. So this is a screenshot from a weather app. And if we look at it, it looks beautiful. It tells us all the information that we need, but the density of the information and how we stack it on the page and the noise is removed. So we can create a great conveyance of information so you know what you need to know, but we can also make it beautiful and easy to explore at the same time. When we look into music consumption, this could be a music player, and we show that we can really convey a beautiful experience when people are listening to music and get away from all the Chrome and the stuff like that that we don't need once we've selected a song that we're going to listen to. Now, interaction is about how we integrate commands into the content. And there's three concepts to really think about here when we think about interaction. The first is that we always want you to interact as much as possible on the canvas, which means everything on the canvas should be directly manipulatable. And it's a concept we call in touch direct manipulation. You've all seen this before if you have a smartphone and you've ever looked at a photo library where there's no buttons to say next photo or last photo. You just take your finger, you manipulate the photo and move it across the screen. Now, when we think of direct manipulation for Metro, this is kind of a little wireframe of categories I may have in a Metro application. I don't need those arrows, right? Because everything on the canvas itself, I can directly click and manipulate. So that kind of artifice, right, being authentically digital, means a lot of things that I've had for a long time, I don't necessarily need in my anymore on the canvas. And the other thing that we care about is charms. So you'll see here that I have my charms. These are these universal tools that are available to every application in Metro, and I want you to use these as much as possible when it gets too hard to do something on the canvas, or when you're doing very specific things like searching or sharing or playing to a device. And once I'm done using those charms, the other thing that I really care about is using my app bar, right? Getting those functions that I need to use that I can't put on the canvas and using that app bar. And then when I need to, having contextual pop-ups that I can actually use to provide more information. So I want to pop into Internet Explorer and show a few things real quick. You know, one of the first for us here is because there's a concept called occlusion, where if, you know, my finger is over a button, like if you could imagine my thumb is over this button here right now, I can't see it anymore. That's a big problem with touch, right? You know, our hands can hide what we need to see. And by putting all of my app commands at the bottom of the page, I really help make occlusion less of an issue when I build touch experiences. And here what we actually see is I have a contextual pop-up where I can do things too. So I'm going to find a different site here, and let's just go look. You know, I'm a sci-fi nerd, so let's go see what's going on at IO9 today. So we'll load up this site, and I'll read this article here, and I may decide, wow, this is a pretty cool article, and this is a pretty cool site, and this is my little bookmark pen, so I'll push that, and then I get my little contextual menu here where I can go ahead and name a bookmark or do whatever I want. And you'll notice here that I don't necessarily need to have a close button on that box. I can just mouse away from it, and it goes away, or mouse away from it. Even my conventions die hard. I just touch away from it, and it goes away. The other thing that we'll see is when I look on the screen here, I can make my Chrome go away. So here I've got a full screen immersive experience, but you know what? I may want to flip that bar and navigate back to some other pages I'm looking at. So by flicking at the top or the bottom of the screen, what I'm actually doing is navigating to my different screens that I have open and my tab on the interface. So that concept of, and I'm going to navigate back, and I just missed my PowerPoint here. Let's go back. You know what? I've got a lot of applications open here. Let me show you a little trick in Windows that is one of the things that I can do when I want to get rid of an application is I can just drag from the top of the screen and drag all the way down, and that little icon just lets me close an application. Now, the wonderful thing about that is I never really need to close an application in Windows 8, because as soon as I navigate away from an application, it will suspend in about 5 seconds. But sometimes when I get too many things, when I'm banging around an application, it's a little bit nicer to be able to just make that stuff disappear. So the other thing that we think about when we think about direct manipulation on the canvas is I kind of showed you how we do it here with the app bars and the interface, but we also want to get away with controls on the screen. The best way to think about this is gaming. Gaming on touch devices was kind of like television was right after radio, right? Did we have TV shows like MacGyver and Alias? No, what people did is they stood in front of microphones and they read the serials that they had on the radio. Well, the first games that we actually had with Windows 8 or with other touch devices would actually put all the Chrome right on the page. So I'd have a virtual controller instead of understanding that, wow, I've got this great device and I've got, you know, sensors and I can tilt it and I can turn it and I can just tap on the screen and make things happen. So we found that by dragging and sliding and all that, we could do away with controllers. So understanding that is a really important way of understanding how we can be fast and fluid and understand how we can use navigation to be effective in Windows 8. Now, interaction, again, we want to leverage the edge of Windows. If you've looked at how I've used Windows with Metro, the edges of the screen are really important, because when I'm holding a device, one of the most useful touching devices I have is my thumbs. So being able to flick with my thumbs and be able to slide and drag is much more easy for me to do than tapping in a lot of interfaces, and we built Windows 8 to understand that. And that means that when we look at applications from an interactive perspective, you know, this is an interface that is a great one to use with a mouse. This is a much better step of being an interface that I can use for touch. But even here, what I'm doing with this interface is I'm hiding a lot of content, right? If I look right below my headlines, all those categories there are basically Chrome. And what I really want to do is up-level a lot of that content. So making things more touch-friendly means up-leveling that content so I can kind of explore and let serendipity kind of inspire some of the things that I'm going to see. And we can see whenever I select anything or want to navigate, I can quickly just flip the screen and get my Chrome to appear so I can actually manipulate functions and do actions that I may not be able to do on the canvas. And we'll see that with my charms as well, where these are the tools that I use to help me get that interactivity off the canvas when it can't be the objects on the canvas that directly allow me to do something. So we also see this example and where it can appear with photos. There are certain times where we have experiences where we want the Chrome to be gone, right? So it may be if I'm showing beautiful photos of a vacation, but then with a quick flick of a finger, I can have that Chrome appear and make an action, and then it can go away. Here, you know, we talked about the browser. This is actually a web page here right now. One of the things we can do is, again, just with the flick of a finger, I get that Chrome to appear for that. Goes away, and I've got a beautiful full-screen experience. So to summarize, we kind of want to integrate commands into the content. We want to leverage the edge, but then we also want to provide those commands contextually. And what that means is the commands that are going to actually appear are only going to appear when I actually need them. This is kind of akin to when you look at a menuing system in a traditional desktop environment where certain features are grayed out when you can't use them. Well, I may want to do that in my applications, but I may just not want to have them appear at all. So the only functions that are going to appear in an app bar are going to be dependent on what I'm doing in the application. And they'll dictate, once I've selected something, what I can do with an application. So if we summarize this, this is, again, is a big area where people get jammed up. One area where people get jammed up when they think about Metro is it's not about taking an information architecture or a site structure from a website and saying, make that a Metro application. It's about up-leveling that content and making it easier for a user to access and discover the content that's available on the site. The other thing that's hard for people to understand unless they've been exposed to the principles is that Metro is really about manipulation. This is the opposite of the web. In the web, you need to use a mouse or a keyboard to directly manipulate each object that you want to do something against. And this is a great example of a page that may be designed by someone that's been used to working in web-based apps for a long time, where if I want to manipulate or favorite something or share it or send it, each item's got to kind of have that capability, and it needs to have that Chrome on the page where I can do it. But that's not what I want to do with a Metro-style app. What I really want to do is get all of that junk off the page, and I want to use direct manipulation. In this case, it would be basically a vertical swipe, and I can select items, and then all of those options appear to me in my app bar. It's contextual, it's there when I need it, and it's not crumbing up my experience or my screen when I don't need it. And we can see how that interface makes for a much cleaner experience without giving up any functionality that we have in applications that we have now. Now, navigation, again, we talked about this a little bit. It's really about, you know, where you're at, not where you might go. And we want to integrate navigational elements into the content and avoid persistent ways, wayfinding, right, and breadcrumbs. And the reason we want to do that is because fundamentally there's two types of navigation structures that you actually see in Windows. And they support a lot of different experiences. One, I call basically a flat hierarchical, basically a flat view. Right? Internet Explorer and a Metro-style app is one screen, and all of the commanding functions around the screen control what actually appears on that screen. Cut the Rope as a game is another example of that type of interface. The reading experience in Kindle is that experience too, where you actually read a book and you search. Adobe Acrobat would be another example of an application that would use that interface. But there's a lot of applications that are going to be content-driven or task-driven that are going to use a hierarchical structure. And that hierarchical structure is basically based on the principle of having a hub screen, which is like the magazine for your app. It's having section views that have those detailed sections that your app is going to consist of, and then having detail views of all of that content, which you're going to look at as well. And if we go think back to the USA Today application I showed you earlier, that's where you see that kind of stuff. So this is an example of a wireframe that's trying to be a Metro-style app. What you see there is Chrome to help me navigate to the rest of the app. It's not what I want for an application, in this case, a travel application. This is another example where, you know, I moved my Chrome up to the top of the screen. That's not what I want either. This is what I want. This is a hub for what a page could look like, and I want to up-level all of that content. This doesn't mean I display all of it, but it gives me a taste of it. And if I want to see all my featured destinations, I can just click that type to see it. I may even want to say, hey, featured destinations, you know, I could put a little number next to it and say, you know, 112 destinations to tell people that, hey, I'm showing you six, but there's actually 112 that you can look at. Again, I want to up-level that content, not bury it so people have to find it. And then the other thing I want to do is remember when I showed semantic zoom at the beginning of the session, I want to give people ways to jump through all those categories because I may have categories that I have to pan and scroll to see, but with just a pinch, I can see every category that actually exists in an application that I want. Let's just show you that again with one more application. So I'm going to actually go out and search because I have so many apps here. Sometimes searching is easier. I'm going to show you an app for MSNBC. So this is a news application, and we'll see that, you know, I've loaded up my screen, I've got my stories, I can scroll, and I've got different channels here, and we'll see my background probably changes here a little bit. But then I can also pinch down, semantic zoom, and I can see I can quickly pop into those categories. So instead of having to scroll through all of them, I've got that beautiful quick jump menu that just takes me anywhere I want to be on that hub. Those are important features to understand how they work, and when you play with Windows 8 and you use it for a while, you'll find you try to semantic zoom everything, because it's such a fun, easy way to navigate through different applications that you miss it when it's actually not in an application. So pride and craftsmanship is about understanding that every pixel matters, and primarily we think about that with typography in the grid. And the best thing to think about with Metro is how we apply these things. We do a lot of the work for you, but it's important to understand that these are guidelines, right? They're things that you respect, not necessarily things that you obey. So they're not absolutes, but they're a way to provide a common structure and foundation for how you can build applications. And the best way to think about this is the grid and type ramps have been used in design for decades, and we still have a lot of variety in how that works. I'm going to prove it to you as we kind of go through this section here. So, our foundation, when you go back and you look at things like Windows Phone, you know, we're founded on clean and beautiful typography. We use typography to create a sense of structure, and we have a consistent ramp, you know, of sizes and weights that we want you to use. So for us, Sego is that font that we actually use in applications, and this is a type ramp. You'll see it's proportional. You'll also see that we provide recommendations on where to use these different type ramps and typefaces. And if I look at how that works in an application, we'll different types in action. And this is actually just a template that I took out of Visual Studio. We can actually see how this stuff is kind of pre-built and defined for you, and you can use it as a great starting point. And you'll notice that in addition to the type ramp, there is actually a grid that we use here. And that grid, everything on this page, provides a visual hierarchy of information that lets users understand what may be the most important thing on the page and what may be tertiary and secondary information. And this is an example that just defines some of the things and the sizes that we use in our type ramp. Now, you don't have to use Sego in your app. If there's a font that is a core part of your application, you can build your own type ramp. We want you to represent and respect the proportionality that provides a visual hierarchy, but we can actually do. And we also realize there's immersive reading apps, and we've experiences. When we think about the grid creates presentation through alignment. And we use that grid so you can get away from the Chrome, right, being, you know, unauthentically digital. So you can use content negative space to kind of build the shape of the grid. And we want you to use proportion to convey the relative importance of a piece of content. So this is kind of our grid structure and the subunits. This shows you the type ramp and how it appears on the grid. This shows you some templates and some of the padding. Now, as developers, what's great is all of these are built for you in Visual Studio. And my advice is they are a wonderful starting point. You'll know that you'll have the media queries, you'll be compliant, you'll do everything, but understand they're a starting point. And I would say probably maybe, you know, something that I want to see us improve in our grids and I want to see us build developer apps as designers and developers is understand that that visual hierarchy can be pushed way more than it is right now. And these are just examples of how we break that out. This is an example for those designers that have had the good fortune to work with designers, is a red line, right? And this may have been something back in the old days that would be a Photoshop comp that you would get, which would kind of detail everything out. Now, you can do this when you build Windows 8 applications, but the reality is all these rules are built into the system, so you don't really need this level of detail as long as folks understand the grid and how to work from it. And one of the great things that we've done is a lot of designers and even developers like to work in Photoshop to kind of work out the details of this. We have a beautiful set of templates at design.windows.com that has all this stuff figured out for you already, so it can help you when you start your work. And here you'll see an example of how we use page headers and how we use these gutters. And as if you look at this stuff, if you look at applications, you can see this silhouette appear in different apps. So some of the screenshots that I showed you earlier, here you kind of see the gutter and the alignment. And you see that tie back into, you know, what our focus groups told us Windows looked like. And we can even apply that to applications that look very different and see how that grid and that consistency is there even though applications look different. So here's an example of some of the templates that those of you that have played with Windows will see in Visual Studio. And you'll see how the type ramp is, you know, still there even across these different screens, these detail views, these section views, and these hub views, and how they will work. And this is a great example of where, you know, in other mediums, a grid is used. It's hard to tell, but there's actually a grid at play on all these covers of Rolling Stone here right now. So there's a type ramp that they use. There's a grid. And there's a hierarchy of information on these pages. Now, there's some things they do differently here that you may not be aware of. One of the things they do that's different than Metro is they use z-space, right? Some things are in front of each other and behind each other. And also, some things are off-axis, right? If you look at the Metallica cover, right, where things are a little off-axis and how they work. But fundamentally, this is a grid. And this is what allows Rolling Stone to look like Rolling Stone, but still have every magazine look unique. If we look here, this is an example of Wired. And, you know, as a layperson, if I told you, hey, Wired has a type ramp and a whole set of guidelines on how they design their app covers, you may say, no, they don't. They all look different. They all look awesome, and they look unique. And it's important to understand that even though you have a type ramp, and even though you have a grid, and even though you have templates, you're not fixed making your app look like everybody else's. You have a lot of latitude in making your app look different, but what we're trying to do is make software like a car, where we know there's a door that you have to open, there's a key or a push button in the ignition, there's a steering wheel, there's a brake, there's an accelerator that doesn't exist in software. And by using things like charms, and by using things like the commanding interface, and by having the grid and the type ramp, we give people all those universal truths so just about anybody can download a Metro app and they don't need an instruction manual to use it. And an analogy I like to think of is, you know, if I show you how to use a doorknob, chances are I only need to show you once. And if you all had to think back to when did I learn how to use a doorknob, you probably don't even remember. Somebody showed you once, and then you knew what a doorknob was, and you knew how it worked. All of these conventions in Metro are us trying to do that, making there one rock that you have to lift to find all that stuff, and letting you develop great experiences and functionality in your application without having to worry about that stuff. So, closing off, again, size and proportion is probably the thing that's most important for Metro design principles, and this is an example of how you can play with that in our grid. This is another example of how we can think about it. And this is how, you know, some of these apps can come to bear. This is a design concept that we've been playing with for some apps. So you can really push how things feel in Windows 8 with Metro-style apps. Now, when we talk about being fast and fluid, we covered this a little bit in our demos about what's important in terms of continuity through motion, ergonomics and touch, and simplified flow. A lot of this you free. Where you need to be careful and understand things is if you start building custom app bars or custom transitions, respect the ethos of what motion is supposed to do in Metro, and that is be fast and be purposeful and not be clunky, right? It's supposed to help, you know, lead you into what you're trying to do. And you can pull apart all of our animation libraries and see what we do with the easings and the accelerations and the timing for how that works. And it's actually a pretty easy thing once you play with some of the libraries to look at. You get a lot for free, and it's a great foundation if you do find that you have to build your own things. And, you know, if you play with Windows, and I highly encourage anybody on the phone that, you know, hasn't played with Windows, I highly encourage you to download the consumer preview and put it on a device. It'll run on just about anything, and it's nice to have a touch device, but you can even experience without the touch device just to get a feel for the animation and how it works. And this is just an example of the animation library that's available to us. Now, ergonomics of touch are really important to understand because, and pardon me, I got to take a sip of my coffee here. And I don't think I'm on video now, but if you guys were paying attention, you would see I'm rocking an old-school Microsoft Expression Blend 3 mug from back in the day here. So that's my ode to Expression, a lot of the history in Microsoft that kind of led to Metro. The ergonomics of touch. You know, we're really designing devices, or our OEMs will design devices that will be held, right? And you may be sitting down, you may be laying down, they may be on your lap, you may hold it up to your face, they may be sitting in docks. All the ergonomics of touch thought about those different use cases and form factors that people are going to be using the devices in. And panning is something that we use because it's such a natural, easy way for people to kind of use devices and get content. It's also why we want you to only be able to panel on a single access, because it allows for manipulation and kind of a rail so that interactivity works really well. And that means that you'll never be able to pan in both ways at once, like, you know, unless you're in a map application, like looking at a map, because the, you know, the grounding in the application and the interactivity falls apart with touch. So you can have sections of your content be locked down and scroll if you need to, but we don't want to have both directions and accesses move at once across the entire canvas. So fast and fluid, again, it's more than look and feel. And so you can follow all the rules in a Metro 8 application and still not have a great application. If you don't think about alignment, right, if you don't think about using the type ramp correctly, if you don't think about your information structure being appropriate. And, you know, that content negative space really make it easy for you to do that. But, again, it's thinking about things like your settings, your application state, right? You know, as soon as I navigate away from an app, it suspends in 5 seconds. Understanding how to preserve state. How to preserve state and transfer state between snapped views and full screen views. These are all the other parts of the experience that make Metro applications so powerful and easy to use. Now, when we talk about being authentically digital and every pixel matters, you know, we want to think beyond those metaphors and infographics and glyphs. So that means embrace the facts that we're digital, they're pixels, remove those boundaries that are artificial, and bring out information in the content by, you know, by reducing visual decoration. We don't want decoration there for no reason if it's just decoration. And, you know, this is an example of a photo picker. This is an example of, you know, some of the ways that we're, you know, we're not having a natural photo album where I drag one picture to another. We're actually using the fact that I can use semantic zoom and sort and, you know, do all the different things I can do in an interface to provide a much more effective way to select content. This is an example here. We've talked a lot about semantic zoom, different models that you can use for semantic zoom. The best way to think of semantic zoom is it is a navigation aid. It's a jump list for all the content that's on a given canvas, and there's a lot of different ways that you can structure that content to navigate through. There's not just one right way. There's multiple right ways to do it, and really understanding your users and what will be the most effective way is something that we're just scratching the surface with and how we can look at things. So here you just see some examples of how I may do some of this when I look across, you know, what semantic zoom might look like in different scenarios. And again, I show you these now because we have some things in the marketplace, but there's just not enough that's really pushing the boundaries here of what we will see. So a word about icons. You heard me earlier mistakenly use the word icon for IE, but the reality is in Metro is we are not about icons at all. We are about tiles. These are not graphic representations of what the app does. They're windows into content that we can surface through the app. And by using glyphs and badges and those notifications, it really helps us create application experiences that will update. So here you see my stock app with updates. We had some other apps. I think my Flip Toast app will actually show other people that have checked in around me and stuff like that. So that's really what we want to use tiles for, and they're a fantastic experience. So if we think of winning as one, again, I think we talked a little bit about contracts and how, you know, leveraging contracts and the ability to share content and accept content, or using the search filter and the fact that I don't even need to be in your app. So, for example, I'm in PowerPoint on my desktop view, but if I want to go search Flickster and find a movie, I can actually do that without even being in the application, right? And it'll load the app for me already, but, you know, let's say I want to search on the Avengers. Well, I was in IE, but I could actually search down Flickster, and let's see if we can make this work. So we'll search for Flickster, and I've got all my results for the Avengers. But you know what? Maybe that's not what I want to search for Avengers. So maybe I want to search IE for Avengers, right? And I'll get a whole different set of results. You know, that charm is so valuable because it doesn't rely on me just being in the app to work, even though it can work great when I'm in the app. These are just super valuable things that just exponentially increase the value of your application. So we really want you to leverage contracts to complete scenarios with other apps. We want you to think about sharing. We want you to think about search. and we want you to think about file picking. And file picking is a great example where we touched on a little bit here. But, you know, if I integrate SkyDrive, you know, or another cloud service to an app, I may have a bunch of photos. Well, as an example, I take a lot of photos with my cell phone, and I'm a foodie. I love food. And I could have, you know, my cell phone, I could take photos, and every photo on my cell phone automatically goes up to my SkyDrive. And I could be on an app in Windows 8 that's a food spotting app where I share pictures of meals I've eaten. As weird as it sounds, people do that. And I can actually use the file picker to simply go out to my SkyDrive app device. It'll reach out to the cloud and get those pictures and upload them into my app that's on my Windows 8 device. These are great experiences that are more difficult to do now that Windows just makes almost invisible and seamless. And that's why contracts are such an important thing to think about when you're building great apps and creating great Metro experiences. So to summarize here, we've talked about a consistent UI model. We've talked about, you know, how sharing and all that stuff enables you to extend the reach of your app beyond people being in it. We talked a little bit about how the file picker does that. And again, all these things exist, so users only have to lift up one rock for how they do those experiences with all apps, right? Because these are things that don't distinguish your apps. They're things every app needs to do. But as a developer, you know, you can get out of spending, you know, 3 weeks writing the settings function for the app. And, you know, having users be confused because in other platforms or even our old platforms, they're in 15 different places in the application. And, you know, to summarize, you know, Metro-style design, it's fundamentally about doing more with less. It's about that pride and craftsmanship. It's about being fast and fluid. It's about being authentically digital and winning as one. Now, if I summarize for a developer, I'm guessing some people are feeling a bit overwhelmed right now. And the great thing to understand is do more with less. A lot of our templates give you a great first start. We do a lot of work for you, so you don't have to worry about that. I would suggest they're starting points, and the most important thing to understand about content before Chrome and visual clarity is going through some of the exercises to prioritize where commands go and where they live, but we do a lot of work for you. In prides and craftsmanship with typography and the grid, again, we do a lot of work for you. And being fast and fluid, Windows 8, Metro-style apps are touch-first, but all of that is inherently built into the system. So you get that, and you get the animation, and you get the flow, and all of that for free. Being authentically digital requires some thinking, right? It requires good collaboration between your other developers and your designers to help you understand, are the apps that you're looking at porting authentically digital, or some of the conventions that you bring to the table about how you've built software for a long time going to work for Metro? Not all of them will. That's probably the most difficult thing that requires a rethinking on how you do things. And then winning is one. We've never had a system or an opportunity that has all these great little features and widgets that we can plug into our apps to make things really easy to share. This is probably the other area where you need to think when you build your app to make great applications. So with that, we've got a few minutes left for questions. I'm curious what people think or if people have any questions. So we have 5 minutes left where we can take any questions that folks have. Does anybody, after hearing all of this, want to work on Windows 8? They'd be excited to kind of build something or want to go look at it now? I see a few questions rolling in here, too. Just to answer some of them. This PowerPoint right now can't be made available directly or publicly, but I'm going to give folks my email address on this call. And if you talk with me, I can maybe help you get a copy of it. It's Chris, C-H-R-I-S, dot Bernard, at Microsoft.com. And I can point you to some places where you'll be able to get your hands on it. It's not one I can give out today. There is another question about XAML, C-sharp, or HTML, JavaScript. The answer is it's your choice in how you build. This is a design-focused conversation, not a developer-focused one, but or development-focused conversation. But, you know, it's your choice on how you develop. These principles apply universally to any of those development methodologies, so it's really up to you on what makes the most sense. All right. Well, listen, we have time for a few more questions, but if not, I hope this was helpful. I hope you're excited about Windows 8. It can seem a little intimidating and scary, But, you know, the thing that I'll take away as a chief experience evangelist for Microsoft, one of the things that's most interesting is if you look at the last version of Windows Phone before Windows 7, if you look at the last version of Xbox, and you look at the last version of Windows 7, go back and look how different they are. And if Xbox today, if you look at Windows Phone today, and if you look at what Windows 8 is going to be, Metro as a design system has put Microsoft in this weird spot where we're the only company making a strategic investment in design across, you know, what desktop, tablet, mobile, and console computing will look like in the living room. And it presents a great kind of brave world, I think, for developers and designers to create experiences in that world. You know, when we look at movies like, you know, Minority Report and all those other great movies, and you look at those software interfaces, what you're seeing is the foundation for how those interfaces and things are going to work. I mean, things like charms, you know, and contracts are going to be needed to do all that stuff. And if you look at those interfaces and the performance and how they work, all of that exists in these platforms today. And I personally think that's actually pretty cool. So I'll sit here for a little while, and if there are no other questions, let me know. Or if there are questions, let me know. If not, please have a great day, and I hope you enjoy the other webcast, and we're looking forward to seeing you at TechEd.